Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Wrestling Federation. For over 50 years, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment.
Two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, former WWE superstar. Of course, he's a WWE Hall of Famer, an absolute legend in the business. One half of the Bushwhackers. He is Bushwhacker Luke. Luke, welcome back to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
Whoa, good day, John. It's great to be on your show again. And hello to everybody out in TV land or podcast land. It's great to be here on the Two Man Wrestling Show.
What is going on in your world? What have you been up to?
What am I being up to, mate? Well, I just had that Christmas time, but I was in my last show, I was in Des Moines, Iowa, in the middle of December, and then it was cold, but no snow. No snow, thank God for that. But I've got a busy year coming up, starting in the middle of January, and I'm Flat Tack. If you want to find out where I am, follow me on my Instagram, Bushwhacker Luke. It's all Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. It's Bushwhacker Luke. It's got my head on top of the world, the world map. And so keep up with me, and you'll know what's going on, and see if I'm in your area.
Are you technologically savvy? That's pretty good. You got an Instagram and everything.
I try to keep up with everything, mate. You know, for an old bastard, it's been in the business for 7 decades. I try. Yeah, you have to keep up on the social media.
Yeah, you got to. Everybody's on there. You got to change with the times and make sure
I've been in this business for 7 decades, mate. And at the moment, I'm quoted on Wikipedia as the second oldest man still performing on the Squared Circle.
Wow. Who's older? Who could be the only guy older?
The great Kochika in Japan. And the guy behind me is Fujiwara. And I think I've wrestled the both in the 70s. Well, one of them early 70s. 1970s.
Wow, it's amazing.
I wrestled them in Japan, It goes back a long time.
So you're still wrestling. You're still active. You're still liking to do it.
Yeah, but I still try to keep in physical shape and that. I owned a fitness center on Clearwater Beach, right above Hulk Hogan's memorabilia store for 8 or 9 years. And, due to the new owner of the shopping plaza, he put my rent up to get me out. Now my gym, which was 7,000 square feet, is a bar and restaurant. Hey, wow. This plaza now more or less is all bars and restaurants. Hogan's still got his little shop, you know, down there selling his memorabilia in the plaza.
Yeah, Hogan's Hangout, Hogan's Beach Shop. Yeah.
Yeah, the hangout's right next to the plaza. As soon as the plaza finishes, it's Hogan's Hangout. And that, but, 2 years ago, that's when I got me out. But so I got really back onto the road, and I'm pretty getting booked pretty heavy.
I was at the beach shop. I love that area. I was there this summer. Great area. And I was having a Hogan Pilsner. There was a very good beer down there. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Now, I'm on the other end of the beach, mate. I've got another place now. I'm not the owner, but I oversee a place called Penfilo's Beach Bar and Grill on South Clearwater Beach. As you come over from the mainland, there's a roundabout, as you know.
Yep.
You know, as you come onto the beach island, there's a roundabout. To the right is the North Beach. To the left is the South Beach. And I'm on the South Beach down there. We're open from 6 at night to 3 in the morning. We're the last place selling food. We sell food to 2:30. So we're really busy after midnight every night.
Wow, nice. You're keeping very busy, very active. And I like that you're still staying in shape so you can still wrestle.
Yeah, but I'm there 5 nights a week at that place.
Man, you like to stay busy, huh?
Yeah, I think I've seen people slow down and that's the downfall. You know what I mean? I'm keeping busy as long as I can.
Yeah, that's true. They say once you get older, you start slowing down. That's when, when everything might go bad. If you stay busy, all good things happen.
It might keep your mind active, mate. Every night I'm meeting new people from around the country. Of course, Clearwater Beach is a tourist area, as you know. So I'm meeting people, fans from all over the country. They come in and they see my photos around and they realize who I am. Funny part is, some people think I died many years ago.
No way! Come on.
No. And March I have my partner coming over for the WrestleMania weekend. We're going to be working at WrestleCon. He was booked for many tours coming over to the States for the last 3 years. And due to COVID, he couldn't get out of New Zealand. New Zealand only opened up about 4 months ago. And then a month after it opened up, he got COVID. And it knocked the shit out of him, mate. You know, he's Butcher's 78 at the moment. But he's instead of coming over for a whole month, we've got him coming over for 5 days at starting on the Friday of WrestleMania. We're gonna be at WrestleCon for 3 days, and we've got two other stores in the LA area for signings.
Are you guys planning on doing anything else together?
Yeah, well, this is the feel. This is to feel out how he is gonna be. We're lucky. He's only coming from New Zealand. Auckland has a direct flight to LA, so that saves the life. You know, usually when you come over, you have another 2-3 hours layover in LA. You hop on another plane, and you've got 6 hours to come across the country. Well, he's coming because he's got a straight shot from Auckland, New Zealand, to LA, and that's where he will be for this tour. And I'm hoping that he handles it okay and we get him back for other tours. But this is, we're feeling him out.
Yeah, get his feet wet. Make sure he likes it, everything goes well.
He said that COVID knocked the shit out of him, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
We've got a bad dose of it.
Yep. It seems to be, definitely an issue for sure. But that's awesome, Ed. I didn't know the Bushwhackers were coming back for WrestleCon. That's great.
Yes, Butcher's never done a signing in the States. The only time we might have signed a few photos was when he came over when we went in the Hall of Fame. You know, before there was no conventions in the 80s and 90s, there wasn't these conventions going on. There wasn't wrestling conventions or anything like that, you know. And since the mid 90s, all these stores, you know, memorabilia stores, and there's a lot of things going on now in the wrestling world.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And obviously.
And the COVID era sort of boosted it too, because all this online stuff, so that made it big.
Yeah, the virtual signings.
Yeah. Virtual signings.
But that's awesome that Butch is actually going to come over here and do this, because I know how rare it is, like you said, to get the Bushwhackers together for a sign. That's super rare.
And with this book coming, with this book that just came out in November, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, the blood and the sweat is from being a villain, you know, for 20 years, and then the tears is being in WWF. So that's the book come out on that. And I just heard on the 31st of December, we were number one on Kindle. You know, by wrestling bios.
That's awesome! Congratulations. Did you expect that from the book, or were you kind of surprised?
Well, there's a lot of stuff that stuff like it was drugs, sex, and rock and roll. I think we put a lot of that in. The stuff that happened behind the scenes. The book's mainly about behind the scenes, you know what I mean? It's not about big matches. Maybe mention a few of them, but that was it. It's all about that stuff going on in our lives from when we first started traveling in 1965. 66, we joined up together, and 68, we're going to work for Jim Barnett in Australia, WCW. And then we started going into the East, you know, Singapore, and driving up in Malaya and Asia. Before it was Malaya and Asia, and the Civil War was going on before it came Malaysia. So we were driving up while the war was going on. There was a curfew of 5 p.m., but we'd drive up through the jungle and that. After that, and you could hear da-da-da-da-da-da in the jungle. Fighting. Crazy, huh?
Yeah, that is crazy. Wow.
Hey, we were young and full of piss and vinegar.
Yeah, like you said, 7 decades ago, that was crazy.
Yes. So that was in there. That was the start of the book. Well, the book starts about going back to the 30s and 40s, the wrestling. There's a bit of history there. John Crow, our editor, he went deep into New Zealand wrestling, and he started when it first started with Lofty Blomfield and different Americans coming over on boats and staying here in Australia. And then he already starts in the 30s and 40s. And then it gets to us starting in the mid-60s.
Pretty awesome to think, like with that book, it's like that's the history of the Bushwhackers dating back all the way back. It's pretty awesome to kind of go through that lineage.
Yes, and John did a good job digging all that stuff up. He dug up more than I knew about the past. When I started, mate, in this business, there was no television, and we'd do shows, and we'd put posters up, and we'd more or less go to the towns in the morning and walk around at lunchtime in the town when everyone was out for lunch. So that was the way of advertising. We were in town. We had radio in the big towns. In the small towns, you'd come in early and get the reporter from the evening paper, because the evening paper came out at 4 or 5 o'clock. If you got in early, like before 10 in the morning, you could do an article, and the guy would take a few photos of you and put you in the evening paper. And that's how we promoted shows in the country. Crazy, huh?
Yeah, wow.
We didn't get TV till I think 67, 68. And it used to start at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and finish at 8 o'clock at night. Crazy.
Wow. Oh my goodness. Did you keep track? Because like they're not filming. Do you keep track? Do you write things down like back then or no? Like how did people keep track of like the shows?
Shows, posters in the towns, you know what I mean?
But I mean, like the results and stuff. Did you like write it down? It's like maybe almost like keep a diary of what was going on, or no?
No, no. After the show, mate, we'd find a place to eat. See, New Zealand, most of New Zealand closed down at 6 o'clock those days. The pubs, all the bars, everything closed down at 6 o'clock, unless you're booked in a hotel that have a house bar for guests. For guests staying in the hotel, and the guests could have guests bring friends. So, you know, if I'm staying in a hotel, I'm in a town, and I'm meeting a few people there, I could bring them to the house bar in the hotel to have a few drinks afterwards. But all the places were closed down at 6 o'clock. You were lucky to get something to eat after the show.
And you can't go out drinking either, apparently. That's not good. That's
no,
not fun.
No, you have to buy your own drink. And that, but even small towns, if we didn't have if we stayed in motels, we'd have to go to the bottle store and buy stuff before, you know, in the afternoon, and go back to the motel and cook something in the motel. You know, if they had a grill there, you put a few steaks on and make a salad, and that was it. Crazy, huh?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, how do you go from that to like making your way over to the States and like gaining popularity?
Well, we worked around the East and all that, Singapore and Bangkok and that in the 70s, 71. And then Andre came over in 1970, 69, 70, and Butch and me worked with him around the country. Gene Faree, that was his name, 350-pound, 7'4". He was just a kid then. He'd just been working in England and Europe. And that, we were kids too, in the early 20s. Anyhow, we worked with Andre handicap matches and all that, and tags in the main towns with a promoter. Steve Ricker would be his partner, New Zealand promoter. So we got to work in Australia. We worked with Jim Barnett. We worked with a lot of Americans, you know. Of course, they brought us over just to do jobs for the Americans. You know, Australian boys and the Kiwis, New Zealanders, you know, we'd work with King Curtis, Mark Lewin, a lot of big names, you know, they're dead now. Most of them are dead. Killer Kowalski, shit, there's dozens of guys who came to Australia. Jim Barnett had 10 Americans there at the same time. Oh, here's one that's still alive. Sweet Daddy Siki. Yeah, I see him in Canada now and again when I'm up there.
Hey, Mark Lewin's still alive. He's living Mark, in Singapore. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark is still alive. Yeah. Still
married a princess, I think.
Yeah, Mark keeps himself in shape. Mark has always been a health man. You know what I mean?
Yep.
He was in the gym every day in New Zealand. He lived there for 2 years. Him and Curtis lived there for two or 3 years in New Zealand after they left Australia. Mark was the booker for Jim Barnett in Australia. Then he came to New Zealand in 72. We'd already left the country then. We come over, you know, we come over. Andre first come to North America in 71 for the Vachons. You know, Butcher and...
Paul and Maurice, the Mad Dog.
Paul and Maurice Vachon in 1971. And in 72, Butcher and me were wanting to get out of the country. So the promoter talked to Morris and Paul, and they brought us over to the same territory. Now, when Andre arrived there, Grand Prix was only running one town a night. When we arrived there, about 9 months later than Andre, they were running three towns a night. Grand Prix, that was counting Ontario and Quebec. And the Rougeaus, Jock and Jack Rougeau, the father and uncle of Raymond and Jock Jr., they were running one town. So there was four towns getting run in Quebec and Ontario each night. The Gardens was hot. You know, the Gardens of Toronto, what's the Gardens called there? Shit, having a brain fart.
The Maritimes?
The Maritimes?
You're talking about Maple Leaf Gardens.
Maple Leaf Gardens, Jack Tunney. That was a hotbed for wrestling. And all the big hockey arenas in Quebec were packed all the time. That was a great time in wrestling. I never realized till about 10 years ago, they said the hotbed in North America was that area in the early 70s. From 69 to about 74, that was a hotbed of wrestling.
Thanks a little bit to you guys, right? Thanks
yeah,
a little bit.
Then that, when I arrived there, you know, we were booked on one show, you know, and then all of a sudden, about 2 weeks later, we had a meeting in the office. Oh, the office was on three floors. One floor was the clerical side where they did all the booking and that. Then one floor was a gym, weightlifting gym, a proper gym, and then the next floor was a ring and all that sort of stuff, the ring and a running track. And we didn't know all about that. It had that. We're on the road every night. Anyhow, they had this meeting, and you know, I thought there's 25 to 30 guys in the territory, counting the locals, you know, 25 guys in each town. And that when they had the meeting, there were 60 guys there. And then I saw all these guys that I'd met in Australia, you know, many years, you know, five, 6 years ago, they were there in the territory. That was hot territory.
Definitely.
Really hot.
So you mentioned Andre. What was Andre really like? I mean, is he really this big drinker, this big guy? You know what I mean?
Yes.
All these stories, is this actually true?
Yeah. But now, Andre, I got photos here, but they're on the phone that I'm using with you now. Otherwise, I'd show you. Andre in New Zealand is 350 and 7'4". Now, the last show that he did was WWE. He was, you know, he had knee surgery, and he was in Butch and Mike's corner, the Bushwhackers' corner, against the Natural Disasters. He was 540 pounds. So he gained 200 pounds, you know. From 69 to 92, that last match was when we were against the Natural Disasters. If you look up on Google and that, you'll see an interview with us doing it for the show, the Natural Disasters, a promo with Andre with us.
Yeah, he's got the canes on his hand, right?
Yeah. He was, now, mate, I travel with this big bastard. I love the guy to death. He, you know, if he liked you, he'd look after you. And he looked after me and Butch when we arrived in Montreal. And that, and of course, when then after Montreal, we were doing the territories around the States. You know, we worked for Stu, and then we came in the States. Now, I've got to tell you how going to Stu, but we worked around the States, so we met him. You know, he was brought into a lot of territories for a week, you know, in summertime, and, or, you know, brought into territories for a few shows. And that we worked with him in a lot of areas, a lot of territories. And then of course, WWF. But one night we were with him, and we were way out the north of Canada, and we were working against him, and I think Dominic DiNucci, God bless him, he just died last year. You remember Dominic DiNucci?
Oh, yeah. Actually, oddly enough, I interviewed him about a month before he passed. He sounded as healthy as could be, so I was shocked when he passed.
Yes, I was with him too, and that him and of course Dominic DiNucci and Tony Puglisi, they were the big tag teams for Vince and up in Canada too, the Italian Connection. Anyhow, I worked with Dominic and Andre up north for a week, and we're driving back, and of course he had Frank Vauer, his manager, with him driving the car. And he was driving, or Frank was. Anyhow, they bought 72 beers. I'd say 2.5 hours later, we had to stop at a truck stop to get another 72.
Wow. So he is a big drinker. So at least.
Beer, a can of beer would be 2 or 3 gulps. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was a can. And that big hand would just go like that. That big hand would just go like that. And the can would be crushed. Bang. You know, your monstrous hands.
Would he get drunk?
No.
Would he get drunk, though, or no?
No. No. He'd get merry, joke and all that sort of stuff. But he always walked. He never walked straight. I never saw that big bugger get drunk. You know, he'd joke and ha-ha and all that sort of stuff and have a good time. But I never saw him. And he used to, Vince was the only guy that let him drink in the 90s and the late 80s. And that Vince would let him drink in the dressing room. He was going through a lot of pain at the time. You know, that giantitis, he never got shot up, you know. It was too late for him, I think, when they came out with all those drugs that would control the giantitis, or whatever you call it.
To you know? Control the gland, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and he was in a lot of pain because between the joints, the cartilage, with that hormone, it grows the cartilage between the joints, and it pushes the joints apart, and that's where the pain is. You know, the cartilage starts growing. So there's too much testosterone in their system.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think he was drinking because he was in all that pain, or was he drinking for fun, too?
In the end, he'd have, before the show, he'd drink 2 bottles of red wine before a match. Yeah, that was to ease the pain and get his mind away from the pain. Of course, you know, that pain, you know, it's the same as people, the bodybuilders that take HGH. You see their forehead come out. Arnold, for one, you know, Arnold, the bodybuilder. Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of them. You look at them, and they, you know, the jaw comes out, and that's because the cartilage is in their head. It forces those bone structures apart. Anyhow, he was drinking, but he was a lot of fun. We'd meet him later for meals. He had special places in Montreal where he used to go and eat. I forget the street, but he'd had a place upstairs on the corner of this, off the main street, off St. Catharines, is the main street of Montreal, downtown. Down one end is east and west. Now, one end, the east end, is very French. That's where Butch and me were living. They didn't, if you walked in a store, they talked French to you. They didn't want to talk English, even though they knew English. That's how it was in 1972. That's the Parti Quebecois was trying to pull away from the rest of the country. I don't know when you remember that. You know, Trudeau, not Trudeau's son who's running the country now, but his father. That's when they were trying to pull away and have the money system different and everything from the rest of Canada. Crazy times.
Yeah, for sure. That's
we were there then, yeah, and with Andre. But he took care of Butch and me, you know, and we wrestled him. Edward Carpentier, who was partners with the Vachons in the promotion and who later became the voiceover man for the French television. Remember Edward Carpentier, the Flying Frenchman?
Oh, yeah. Technically speaking, a former NWA champion. Technically, I guess you could say. Although I don't know if the record books would agree, but technically he was, right?
WWE, he was WWF champion in the late 50s and in the 60s. He had turns of that. He was the first man I ever saw doing, what is it called?
When you flying head scissors?
You stand on the corner with your back to the ring and you do a backflip back into the ring.
Oh, moonsault, yeah.
Moonsault. He was doing those moonsaults in the 60s and 70s. Edward Carpentier, he was a former bodybuilder too. Good body, but he was getting on and that, and he became a wrestler, and that was it. That's when he left France and come to Canada.
Why do you think Andre liked you guys so much?
Well, he was young when he came to New Zealand and that, and, you know, we worked with him every night. And we joked with him. We stayed in motels around the country, and we were with him during, you know, we'd be staying in motels. The baby face and the hills would be in the same motel, not away from all the fans, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And that, we just got on, we always got along with him. Always got along with him.
So when you got into the States, what was like your first major territory that you and Butch went to?
Well, that was the first one in North America, the Grand Prix.
And what about U.S.?
Before we get into the States, I've got to tell you that. We were there for a year and a half, and we're used as one of the top tag teams in the town. Not the main. We weren't the top tag team. The Hollywood Blondes were the top male tag team. We were one of the tag teams. We worked against Dino Brito and Gino Bravo, a lot around the country, and the two Indians, Billy White, Billy Two Rivers, and another White Wolf, or one of the other Indians, and the Vachons. We spent a year and a half working with those three teams, because it was a big territory, you know, over Quebec and Ontario, and then we just worked with those three. So they came up to us and said, you know, you've been here and we've been, you know, kept you on top, but we've got to start using you, doing jobs to get the new teams over. And they said, but we'd rather you book you out somewhere else and then bring you back later. And then, and I said, well, book us out. And he said, well, we're going to book you into a territory in Calgary. Now, we never heard of Stu Hart. We never heard of Stampede. So we flew over to Alberta on a Thursday, booked into the Tavis, this hotel where all the boys stayed, Notorious Hotel. All the boys stayed there. And Friday, we started. Now, we started as in Calgary. They taped every Friday night. In the pavilion, there was two arenas in the pavilion. There was the corral, which held about 12,000, and then there was a pavilion that held maybe 3,500. Now that's the pavilion was the arena, a small arena with seating coming up around it, all around it, and floor seating. And this is where they sold the cattle. They did all the horses and cattle they bought in, and they did all, you know, where they have auctions for the animals, right? So it always had that smell. Anyhow, we arrived there the first night and we met Archie Goldie, the Mongolian Stomper. And, you know, we were working against the tag team champions this night. And I think it was the semi-final match on the card. And we had to get DQ'd in the end, right? So we worked the match. And that we hadn't met Stu yet. He hadn't arrived. And we worked the match. And in the end, we got DQ'd. I think we had a New Zealand flag or the chain. And we knocked them out. They were bleeding. And we're beating them up. Next minute, some kids were thrown in the ring. And the guy yelled out to us, "Beat him up, champ. Beat him up, champ." In a high-pitched voice. So two kids came in. Next minute, two more kids came in, got thrown in. The kids were bleeding. Two kids were bleeding. They'd been, and he said, "Beat them up." So now we've got the two guys we work with and four kids were kicking the shit out of them. And then I guess all the referees come out. I can't remember, but we got out of the ring. Now, when we got out of the ring and we walked back to the hole, going down the hallway to the dressing rooms, right at the front was a thick-set man, 5'10", say 5'10", is wide at the shoulders, but wider at the hips, about 270, and he says to us, "What the fuck are you doing? They're my kids you're kicking out, beating up." Now we didn't realize that this was Stu Hart, and Stu Hart had 12 kids,
yeah,
4 girls and 8 boys. So we this was Friday night. We kicked the shit out of the kids and we went back to the dressing room. And that's the first time we spoke to Stu Hart. Now, that TV was showing the next morning at 10 o'clock. And all the kids were known because they saw programs, walked around the arena while the show was on and saw programs. You know, from 11 years to 13 years old, they were selling programs around the ring. So everybody knew them in TV land. Now, little did we know that 3 times a year, Stu ran a double show in Calgary. He ran the Friday night show, and then Sunday afternoon, he'd run in the corral, and he'd bring an extra name and a big name from somewhere, a name that he's had here before, but he's brought him back. And there was a big show. So the next night, the Saturday night, we went and worked Edmonton, the second biggest town in the territory. And that, and of course, they hadn't seen us on television. Those days, the television was bicycled. You understand what that is? It's played in one town where you shoot it, and then it takes a week. It's started, they do multiple right. tapes.
They move they it.
And they send them to all the yep. towns in the that have their TV. So all these towns are a week behind. So we work, we go in Edmonton and work for the first time. And, you know, the reaction was so-so, you know. The reaction was so-so because we worked against the top guys there, you know. I guess the two champions. Anyhow, Sunday we came back. The show that weekend, as I said, they had the show in the corral. And that night, that afternoon when we came out, the people were throwing stuff at us. Now, that we had heat already, you know, heat, because they'd seen us beat up the kids on television, but it wasn't, we wasn't the heat that you could draw a house, you know, fill a house up in the main event. We had to build out, we had to come back and do more, you know, to get that drawing power. But that, excuse me, Bubbles, shut up.
she's not a Hart family fan.
Yeah, hey, shut up. Anyhow, sorry, mate.
No problem.
Anyhow, we came back and we worked the second shot in Calgary and that, and people were throwing stuff at us. And that night we took the belts and won the belts 2 days in the territory with the champions. And that system and what I'm talking about, the same thing happened in a lot of places. We're only in there for a week or 2 weeks, and we won the belts. Anyhow, That was it. We were at Calgary for a year and a half. Archie left, and we were main events on the card every night. He was, you know, Archie Goldie was the Mongolian Stomper. He left, and then next minute, we were going to Stew's every Sunday afternoon, and then working out the card for the week. And more or less, we didn't realize it, but he was using us as the bookers. Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
And we were doing the cards for the week, and that was it on Sunday, and we worked Sunday night. Now, the Stewart's kids were heavy ribbers. You've heard about, you must have heard about the ribs that the Hart kids had done.
Oh, yeah.
Brett was only 13 then, but there was Dean, Smith, and Bruce.
Ross.
And Wayne, they were crazy. Heavy ribs too, especially if someone thought their ship came into the territory and thought their ship didn't stink, you know, who were up themselves, the Harts would really rib them heavy. Next minute, the talent would be leaving. Crazy. I don't want to start on stories there, but a lot of incidents happened in that year and a half we were there.
But that's great, though. You guys were, like, super over everywhere you went. I mean, you guys were, like, instant heat magnets.
Then we were called to go back to New Zealand for the first. The New Zealand promoter had got television. Now, this was 1976. He got television in New Zealand. It was called On the Mat. And he asked us to come home for the tapings for the season of On the Mat. Which we did, which we shouldn't have done, but we did. We came back to New Zealand and worked a series of events on the mat and blah blah blah, and things didn't go too well there. You know, Mark Lewin and King Curtis were the bookers with Steve Rickard, the New Zealand promoter, and they'd been there now from 1972 to 76. And they had hot-shotted the territory. So when they left after we did the TV series, and of course, when you hot-shot the territory, when the main guys leave and he took talent with them, the territory sort of went on the arse. And they brought us home. We had a lot of newspaper clippings from the States, you know what I mean, in New Zealand, saying how good we were doing, and they brought us back home as heels instead of baby faces, you know, and which we should have been, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we'd been overseas, and they've seen a lot of write-ups and papers about us and all that sort of stuff, but no, they brought us back as heels, and so... Butch got into a business for a short time, like a 7-Eleven, bought a 7-Eleven, and I bought a nightclub, into a nightclub, and I started, still wrestled, but I never, New Zealand wrestling started went in the, down the shitter for a while, excuse the language, and I started working, going back to Australia and working. Now Jim Barnett had left Australia, and the Fullers were running Australia. You know, the Fullers.
Rob and Ron, yeah.
Yeah, Robert and Ron, but no, their dad.
Oh, yes, catch.
The Fullers were big names in the States. You know, what was the dad's name? Shit.
Was it Buddy? What was the dad's name?
Yeah, Buddy, but what's the family name, the real name?
Welsh.
Well, the Welsh has owned, I didn't hear till later, but the Welsh have owned part of all the territories from one side of the south to the other side of the south, to Tampa, you know, to the Florida Championship Wrestling. The Welsh were in bed with everything. Anyhow, they're over Australia, they're running Australia. And it was, and the houses were half the size of what they were when Jim Barnett was there. They'd gone in there with a wrestling style, high spots and all that. Well, before it was fight, you know, punch and kick and blood, and then in the big comeback. And now they're having the high spot wrestling, and the people that see to them, the people in Australia, yeah, were so brainwashed with the Jim Barnett stuff that they didn't like. Well, half the people didn't come to the wrestling like it was at that time. That changed anyhow. I was working there in Japan, and then in the start of 79, I said to Butch, we got both got itchy feet. He sold us for a store and the nightclub. I got out of the nightclub with my partner. He stayed there and that, and we came back. I came back in the States. That's when we came to Hawaii and then went in, and we met in Hawaii. We met Buddy Rose and Roddy Piper on a big show in Pearl Harbor. If you know, everyone, well, the older people know what Pearl Harbor was. Oh, yeah. You mentioned that. That's when the Japanese came and bombed in the Second World War. And yeah, it was a big show in Pearl Harbor, and I met Buddy Rose and Roddy Piper. And Roddy said, you know, Northwest Championship Wrestling, he said, the tag team just left. Was leaving, and we needed a new tag team. And he saw us wrestle, and he called up the promoter that night, Don Owens, and he says, I've got two guys here that will fill the spot really well. And he said, I'll get them to come and call you. So he came to us and asked us, and at the time in Hawaii, we'd been there for 3 months, we were just keeping our head above the water. We were working 5 days a month, a different island every week, every night for 5 days, flying over Diamond Head and, you know, living on Waikiki Beach, right across from the pier, where King Curtis had his boogie boards, his rental. You know, King Curtis?
Yep.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he had his rental there. We were living in a hotel. It was called the Waikiki Circle. And that we living right there, still there, that hotel. And, you know, going to the gym early in the morning and spending the rest of the day on the beach, 5 o'clock, going to the airport, flying to the island. The show was 7 o'clock back. We'd fly back over Diamond Head, and we'd be back in Waikiki at 9:30 every night.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, that was easy. But the money wasn't there. It was a new promoter, and then up there, so it was a New Zealand promoter and bought Ed Francis out. Ed Francis, who had a son playing for the Patriots.
Oh, yes.
And remember?
Yep.
Well, it's going back. That was in 69. This is 79. Ed Francis' son was playing for the Patriots. Wide receiver.
Yeah, Russ Francis, I think.
You're right.
Yeah,
you hit the nail on the head.
Oh yeah,
Russ Francis. Yeah, I can tell you a little story about that and that, because I'm knocking American football and that, and a guy went over the line and that, and scored a touchdown, and then he's in a telephone box with his hand in the ice, and I'm saying, look at that fucking pussy. He just came on, and he came on because I didn't understand them coming on and off every 2 minutes. They changed, you know, the team would go on, another team would come on, you know, because, you know, you had the offensive and then you had the defensive. I didn't understand all this. In New Zealand football, you stayed on the field for fucking the full 80 minutes or 90 minutes. You know, with 10-minute intermission, you're on the whole time. You didn't change players. 15 players on. Anyhow, I see them going on and off, and this guy's just got his hand in the, and I'm knocking them down. Look at that fucking pussy. And that was Russ Francis. Wow. And Ed Francis was in the back of the dressing room.
Wow,
that was a classic moment. All the boys laughed about that.
Hey, you're used to it.
I would say, look at these pussies with all this padding on. Look at these pussies. Real men don't wear pads. They're rugged, they're hard, and they stay on the field for 80 minutes, 90 minutes. And that's what Butcher Me was saying. Hey, I love the game now because I know what it's all about. Yeah, oh, yeah. Crazy, huh? Anyhow, So Roddy called Don. We talked to Don then that night, Don Owens. And then I said, we're going to Japan tour. After the Japan tour, we'll come in. And we set the date from the end of the Japan tour. And here we are now, working for Don Owens. The second week, we won the belts of Adrian Donis and Ricky Starr. Or what's his name, Starr? Ron Starr. Ron Starr is the guy that exposed the business on the West Coast. On CBS, or one of the main NBC.
Oh, yeah. ABC, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, Ron Starr exposed it there and that. And Ron was a great worker. He exposed it 5 years later, 4 years later. But Ron and Adrian were both great workers, you know what I mean? Adrian Donis had a great amateur background too that nobody really knew, but he got really heavy in WWF in the end. He was 350 in that, but he was still taking big bumps, you know, and he had a great brain for the business, Adrian Adonis. Anyhow, we won the belt. Second week, we won the belts off them, and away we went. We were in that territory for a year and a half. We were there actually when Mount St. Helens blew.
Wow.
That night we were in, the dressing rooms were under the stage, Salem, Oregon, and we worked Salem. It was just 50 miles out of Portland. We come out of the arena and it was raining. But it wasn't fucking clear water. It was mud coming down. You know, windscreen wipers were going, and this mud was hitting the windscreen. And we wondered why. Then we found out that Mount St. Helens had blown, and that was the soot from the mountain with the rain.
Wow, crazy. Wow, you guys were dealing with some crazy stuff along the way.
We lived 30 miles away from that mountain. You know, we lived across the border, right across in Portland, in the downtown Portland. It's only on the outskirts of Portland. It's Washington State. And we lived over in Washington State. You know, it's only 50 minutes to drive into Portland, it was, from where we lived. And now that Mount St. Helens was 35 miles away. So we got a lot of soot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, damn.
And then two days later, it blew twice, I think, that night. And then 2 days later, that's when it blew and that big mushroom cloud came up. You know, you still look online, they'll show you the mushroom. It was like a big mushroom in the sky, the shape of when it blew the second time.
Scary stuff. Oof.
Yeah. One old guy stayed on that mountain. He wouldn't leave the mountain. He said, "This is my home, and if I have to die with it," he stayed on that mountain, and the mountain took him.
Wow, damn!
Yeah, they wrote a big story about that. Anyhow, we were there, and that was our time. That was our first day in Oregon. And now to mention the talent in the territory. Okay, Cowboy Ron Bass. Then I got Ricky Martel, Roddy Piper, Adrian Adonis, the main
Matt
guy.
Bourne.
Huh?
Matt Bourne.
Matt just started wrestling with his dad. That's funny. We had some of his first matches. Dad and Matt. Thank God you brought that up. Oh yeah, I knew Matt from when he started. Boy. And of course, Buddy Rose, the only guy I know could stayed in one territory for 10 years on top. He had a great brain for the business. You know, in WWF, he worked as in the early 80s or late 79. No, early 80s, he worked with Playboy Buddy Rose, and he had the Playgirls with him. That was for Vince Sr. And then Vince Jr. brought him back, and now he's 350 pounds. Remember the blow-away diet?
Yes.
He put powder all over his body and got on a fan and blew it off. He says, and his ring weight was 216 pounds.
Yes, that was hilarious, yes.
He was always buddy with people looked at that big fat bastard, But Buddy was a smart man. He was always thinking of different ways to keep himself alive. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And he was a great worker. Some of the bumps he took at 350 pounds was insane. He'd go out through the ropes and look like he landed backwards, not over the top, over the second rope or the first, and that, and looked like he hit his head on the fucking floor outside. But he'd hook his foot on the second rope as he went down. Incredible bump, you know, but people think he knocked himself out. And then he could do that upside down bump into the turnbuckle. That fat bastard, God bless him, could do a lot. Yeah, we joined him up in our army. That's when we first formed the New Zealand. You know, we were called, before that we were called the New Zealand Kiwis. And now they changed their name to the Sheep Herders because we were known for New Zealand, 100 million sheep, and that and that. And we had the New Zealand flag and were dressed in camouflage. And Buddy, we brought Buddy into our army. And he looked at us straight away. He thought, this good, him holding the New Zealand flag and denouncing USA, that gave him more heat. So all the time we were there, he got an extra run with a different gimmick, you know what I mean? Still Playboy Buddy Rose, but he was in the army and carried the New Zealand flag, which gave him a lot more heat.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Of course, he suggested that to us. And, of course, we knew, too, bringing a guy in, American, carrying our flag, gave us more heat, too. Because we'd get them to talk and say, you know, I wasn't victorious before, but now I'm with the Kiwis. We've got New Zealand flag. Hey, we're unstoppable. You know, all that stuff, you know. And that was it. So we were there. We were there for a year and a half. And Jimmy Snuka was there when we first went there. And they sent him to NWA in Charlotte. And that, as soon as we finished our run there, they sent us to NWA in Charlotte. And then 2 months later, Roddy Piper come down to NWA in Charlotte. So now we're all in Charlotte.
The gang's all back together, yeah.
Not all of us, just about three of us, you know what I mean? And Roddy was a heel down there. And we worked with Roddy Piper and Rick Martel for 14 months nonstop, 14 months. Roddy told me before he died that we had 22 consecutive sellouts in Portland. That was the main arena where we did the taping.
22. Pretty
impressive. Yeah, that was a good little territory, mate. We're home most nights. Maybe you stay over one night every 2 weeks, and that was it.
Did you like the Charlotte territory?
We went to Vancouver. Yeah, we moved to Charlotte then. Yeah, and we're in Charlotte. Yeah, Charlotte was a hard. Yeah, the second week they put the belts on us, but they put the pacifiers on us. The pacifiers are the Mid-Atlantic belts. Ray Stevens and Jimmy Snuka had the world champion belts, and they put the pacifiers on us. They were, you know, that was the belt they put on people to keep them happy.
Right. Yep. Pacify you guys.
It didn't keep us happy. Because they were running three towns a night, and we were in the town that we worked every night. We were the main tag team, and we knew in the main towns and the other towns, the heel tag team was making around $3,000. You know, this is 1981 or 2500, where we were making making half of that.
Wow, just because you're on the third town.
Yeah, or the second town, except for big shows. And that, you know, the big shows, they stacked the cards. And they only ran one town that night. Anyhow, we were working against different people. We worked Rocky Johnson a lot, Rocky and George Wells, you know, and the Rocky Johnson. I already knew Rocky. I met Rocky in New Zealand when I flew home for a show in '75 from Canada. We worked with Rocky. Butch and me worked with Rocky in New Zealand. Then him and the Frenchman who was Roddy Piper's, Rick Martel. Yeah, We work with now we're working with Rocky now and George Wells for a period, and then and who else? Of course, we won the belts of Buzz Sawyer and Matt. And Matt from Portland.
Matty Bourne, yeah.
Matty Bourne. And Matt, they were two, what do they call now? AA. They were top, they're amateurs, top amateurs in the state and their states where they came from, and football players. They were all Americans. And boy, those two kids were wild. They slam us out in the middle of the ring and come off the corner on top of us. Then the other one would slam us further out, and the other one would come off the corner to prove that he could go further. This is how they were. They were young and full of piss and vinegar. We worked with them a lot, and we won the belt off them the second week, and we carried on the program, and then and meanwhile we got a call from a guy who we knew in New Zealand when we went home to New Zealand in the mid-70s, Frenchie Martin. Now, he was Dino Bravo's manager. You know, he was Dino Bravo's manager. I don't know what they called him in WWF.
Yeah, he was Frenchie Martin in WWF.
Frenchie Martin, yeah. Frenchie Martin and that called us and he says, "Hey, we've got a spot for you here in Puerto Rico." We said, "How many days do you work?" He says, "No, you only work 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and you work twice on Sunday." And we said, "What sort of money?" And he said, "The money, which was about 500 more, we were making a week, instead of and we're doing 3,000 miles a week in the NWA on the road, and this we're doing 200 miles a week in Puerto Rico, if that." Oof. So, of course, we gave Jim Crockett our notice.
Yeah, a lot better, yeah.
And we didn't know. You don't give Jim Crockett your notice. He's the one that gives you. He's the one, "I'll finish you up at Christmas or Easter or whatever, and I'll bring you back 2 years later." We didn't know that was the way it worked there, politics. And we gave our notice and that. And he didn't like that. We dropped the belts. We gave him 2 months' notice. We dropped the belts and went to Puerto Rico. Now, from then on, he wouldn't book us back into the North, you know, Carolinas. Dusty was booker. Dusty worked with us on tour when I was booking other territories, and he wanted us to come back, and Jim Crocker wouldn't bring us back.
Wow.
Anyhow, I'm getting away from the book. Folks, we've got a great book for you to read, and I'm telling too much. I'm telling you the wrestling side of it now, but you'll get, as the territories, you'll get what was going behind the scenes in all these territories that I'm talking about. Yeah, Blood, Sweat, and Cheers. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And if you want one signed, a book signed by me, and by January I'll have books by February, I'll have books signed by Butch too. You have to email me at bushwhackerbrand@gmail.com. Bushwhacker, BUSHWHACKER, brand@gmail.com. And you can get a signed copy from me at the moment, and later on, maybe 2 months, I'll have the books back from New Zealand, and I'll have Butch will have signed them.
Awesome. And of course, there's a lot of stories of the Bushwhackers when you guys make it into the WWF and meeting Vince and those crazy characters. You guys somehow playing baby faces after being vicious, brutal heels as a sheepherder.
Our lives, yeah, that's where the tears come in. The blood and sweat is all these heels and then the baby face. Now, John, I have an appointment at 10 o'clock. Yes. I'd like to carry on my story where I left off in Jim Crockett's territory going to Puerto Rico and come back, and they can move on how we left and where we went into Puerto Rico, which is very interesting.
Yes, definitely. Let's definitely do that. And, of course, if you go online, find the petition to get you into the Royal Rumble this year. Yes. So great stuff.
Yes, another Hall of Famer. from Atlanta, who was a great referee for years, and then he went to WWF, and he became the manager of Raw. You know who I'm talking about?
No, who is it?
The colored guy who became the manager of Raw, and he was on TBS for years and years.
Teddy Long.
Teddy Long started this. He saw me in a show recently wrestling, and the WrestleMania we're talking to him. He's an old friend of mine from way back, from early 70s. Oh no, mid 70s. He said, let's see if Bushwhacker Luke be in the Royal Rumble. It's 31 years since I did that 4-second stint in the Royal Rumble. Yep. So if you could go in there and nominate me for the Royal Rumble, if you go to my Facebook page, there's a link there to go in and put me in for the Royal Rumble. I'd appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you, Luke, for all the time. Really appreciate it. We'll have to bring you back and finish it off from the JCP to Puerto Rico to WWF.
Yes, that is going into Puerto Rico is an exciting story at the start. Anyhow, folks, we're coming back. We're coming back to this podcast. Sorry, John. What is it? Two-man
power trip, baby. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, two-man power trip, guys. All you people out there, thank you for listening. And remember, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Bushwhacker Luke. There's a globe behind my head. That's the real me. So go to there and see where I am next. And I may be in your town in March, February, or March, or April.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.